Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News.
It's the Ringers Philly special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly special. Shiel Kapadia, joined by Ben Solak, Ace producer, Cliff Augustine. It is Tuesday. It feels like it should be like Thursday of Super Bowl week. It's Tuesday of Super Bowl week. We talked Eagles offense versus Chiefs defense yesterday. Now we're going to the other side of the ball today. Benny Soles, Eagles defense against the Chiefs offense. How are you feeling this afternoon?
I'm feeling, you know, Radio Row tiredness plus Senior Bowl tiredness. I got the cough drop in. I got the water with hydration supplements in the bottle. And we are going to make it through the week, baby. Feeling good.
Cough drop. I'm glad we are doing this remotely then, because I do not want to be. All due respect.
No, it's not sick. It's tired plus how dry it is. This happens every year when I come down to Phoenix. I come to Phoenix every year, and within a few days, I start losing my voice, get scratchy. I wake up with like a super dry cotton mouth. My nose is stuffed. Energy levels are fine. It's just the dryness. And so I've been trying to fend it off. I've been here for like almost a week now. Got the liquid IV. All right. Pedialyte, basically.
Oh, love it.
I've been doing this. I know the moves. It's just not getting enough sleep, doing too much talking. Shield keeps throwing me on these podcasts that I got to do. So I'm, you know, trying to stave it off.
I also am hydrating. I also had the dry mouth yesterday during the media night. So you got to hydrate. As you get older, you learn these things. I mean, you're just looking for bottles of water everywhere you go. You're looking to refill your water bottle. Very important. All right. I was just with the Eagles this afternoon at their team hotel, talking a little to a Jason Kelce, Elaine Johnson, Nick Sirianni had his press conference. They had various people out there. I don't know that there's too much you can glean from any of this. I mean, it was a little bit of a trip down memory lane where they were talking about last year, 2021, how badly that started. We kind of forget about that a little bit. But, man, halfway into year one of the Nick Sirianni experience, no one was thinking we would be here this soon later. So, you know, the players were just saying the consistency kind of his message. It didn't change. There wasn't something he did massively differently as a head coach at that time. It was kind of just doubling down on all the things he was pointing to. And as Jason Kelce mentioned, it was nothing wild that he was pointing to. It was the same stuff, the connection, the competition, the takeaways, the explosive plays, all those things. And eventually it turned. I do think it's interesting. Four core guys.
Yeah. It was all that. And giving play calling to Shane Steichen, you know, that's a part of the story they don't gloss over there a little bit. But I've been on pods this week. People ask me, like, how did this all start? Like, how did this happen? I was like, really the first domino of like the end result of this season was when Sirianni gave Steichen play calling last year. That really like started the whole like, oh, we see what it can be with Jalen Hurts and like the rushing quarterback game and our running game with our offensive line. And then Sirianni elects this offseason to keep Steichen as the play caller, which a lot of head coaches would struggle to do. And like, yeah, that was really the first domino.
Yeah, I don't know that, but I would say it's not like that simple because it's still Nick Sirianni's offense. Like, I don't know that the plays on the sheet were bad. The plays they were calling were not working, and they were so pass heavy. There's no doubt about it. It was kind of the approach, but who knows? Maybe, you know, Steichen certainly deserves credit, and he's done a fantastic job.
Right, that's why I say, like, it was him giving away the play calling, right? Like, they didn't reinvent the offense. They did a little bit this year, but A.J. Brown came in, and I think that would have happened regardless who was calling the plays. But Steichen just, we've said it all year, he calls the same stuff, and then he hits the counter right when you're supposed to. He gets it, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, how do we talk about this this Chiefs offense against this Eagles defense without just saying Patrick Mahomes is really, really freaking good? It's going to be hard to slow him down. Like, you're writing a big preview piece, right, with Stephen Ruiz for The Ringer later this week. Like, what are your big picture ideas? Let's say you're doing a 10-minute radio hit and they say, Ben, how do the Eagles slow down Patrick Mahomes? Like, what is at the top of your list for the Eagles to do?
We've talked like you have to start with the pressure. You have to start with the front, right? That's where all of these conversations are. That's where you come back to the future, come back from the future and tell me the Eagles beat the Chiefs by multiple scores. What happened is that with the front one, they got Mahomes down a ton, right? Now, next-gen stats, I thought this stuff was pretty important. Mahomes has been pressured on 34% of his dropbacks this postseason. Regular season was only at 25%. So both the Jags and the Bengals were able to heat him up more than teams in the regular season. When you go back and you watch how, they did it with their down rushes, right? They didn't have to blitz too much. And critically, they pick on Orlando Brown. Orlando Brown is a left tackle for the Chiefs. It was an early pick. It actually wasn't that early of a pick. It was a third-round pick. Chiefs traded for him with an early pick, put him in at left tackle. It was immediately to their benefit to install him there. Like, he was a boost off of who they had previously. However, Brown is a liability in pass blocking in one-on-one situations. He's just too big. He's too heavy-footed. The way that Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick get off the ball, the explosiveness that these guys have, you see where the explosive rushers, like Trey Hendrickson. These are the guys that beat Orlando Brown. This is the guy to circle. This is the moment where you're at. And you saw the Jags and the Bengals go after him recently in the postseason. So that's your pressure center. That's your point. That's who you want to get after. You think you can beat him. You think you have the right guys to beat him. That's the first half of the battle. The second half of the battle is, once you pressure Mahomes, what happens next? Because usually what happens next isn't good for you. It's good for him. It's good for them. And that's why Mahomes is obnoxious, is because you can pressure him and it doesn't matter, right? NGS. When under pressure, Mahomes' sack rate, how often he gets sacked on plays under pressure, is first in the league this year, was sixth last year, fifth the year previous, fourth the year before that, and second the year before that. In terms of his ability to extend to dropbacks, how many of his pressures became dropbacks where he got away from the pressure and then, you know, the clock kept running, he was able to throw the football away? First this year, fourth previous, third the year previous, third the year previous, second the year previous. He is the best player in the league at turning a pressure into a at least net neutral, if not net positive play for his offense. And critically, you can't blitz him, right? Everybody knows, like, Mahomes against the blitz is superhero. It's superhuman. He's three times the EPA of everybody else, yada, yada, whatever. And so the path to the Eagles pressuring Mahomes is very clear. They have a elite four-man rush. They have a deep rush. They can get, you know, the guys late in the drive when they do the line change, guys late in the game. They've had an incredible fourth down rush this year, right? Closing out games, the league leaders in quarterback pressure rate this year in the fourth quarter are Brandon Graham, Trey Hendrickson, Josh Sweat, and Hassan Reddick. Like, it's just like that, like, They are so good because they're so deep that they're freshly in the game. So all the pressure stuff makes sense. It's clear as day. It's when you go to finish that sentence by saying, and because the Eagles can pressure Mahomes, they'll be able to beat Mahomes, where you lose me. Because this guy against pressure is what separates him. It's what makes him truly the elite of the elite. The one on top of the mountain is because pressuring him is half the battle. You have to be able to get him down. You have to know he's going to beat the first pressure. You have to stay strong to your scramble drill rules. You have to play the entire down. And that's really, really difficult to do.
Yeah, this is not a, you know, I think we talked about that. I can't remember if it was with Mina or on Extra Point Taken, but this is not a, you know, hey, just get the quarterback off his spot and impact the quarterback and influence the quarterback, make him uncomfortable. No, this is not that kind of game for the reason you said. When he extends plays, he is absolutely deadly. He's tough to bring down. I mean, I remember watching that Jags game before he got injured and thinking, like, the Jags are doing a pretty good job here, and it doesn't matter. I mean, he was still making play after play against them. So this is not a pressure game. Those pressures need to result in negative plays, sacks, incompletions, turnovers, however you want to frame it. It can't just be, hey, make him feel comfortable and get him off his spot, because he's used to playing like that. He's played like that, and he can still execute when you do that. And I agree with, you know, that Orlando Brown-Josh Sweat matchup is really interesting, because Josh Sweat should really be the kind of guy who can give Orlando Brown problems for the reasons that you just mentioned. And the Eagles don't stunt a ton, but, you know, Josh Sweat and Javon Hargrave, we've seen scenarios this year where those two stunt and it looks really, really good and gives opposing offensive lines quite a bit of problems. So, yeah, I think Josh Sweat is absolutely a player to keep an eye on. I mean, Joseph Asai was giving Orlando Brown all kinds of problems in that Bengals-Chiefs game in the AFC Championship game. And Josh Sweat is a better player than Joseph Asai. So,
they're similar in terms of that length and that explosiveness, right? That's the prototype you want. Sweat this year, NGS also had this. Average get off, how quickly he gets 1 yard past line of scrimmage, 0.75 seconds. Second fastest in the league behind only Myles Garrett. Anybody who has a Hassan Reddick MVP ticket is out of their mind if they don't have a Josh Sweat MVP ticket. This is a enormous Josh Sweat game.
Yeah, I mean, he lines up over there. And then, of course, can't forget the old dog, Brandon Graham, Super Bowl.
Yes,
it's happened
sir.
Before. And listen, he's played really, really well. The fewer snaps have helped him. He's won his one-on-ones. He's looked great this year. He's going to be hungry. He's going to be ready for the moment. He's going to be talking trash to Orlando Brown from the opening snap or from the coin toss like we saw before. So I totally agree with those. Yeah, the Chiefs interior is their strength. Not to say you can't win some one of your one-on-ones there, but tackle is their weakness. So whether it's I agree with that Orlando Brown is the guy, and then you'll absolutely take your chances with Hassan Reddick versus Andrew Wiley on the other side. And again, have to finish. I mean, if there are plays in this game where you feel like you had him and he scrambles and he makes a play, those absolutely could just end up being the difference in which team wins or loses in this game. Now, the other thing is what we've talked about is that you know what the key to the game is. I know what the key to the game is. Listeners listening are probably like, all right, what you just said, that didn't surprise me too much. Guess who else knows that? Andy Reid knows.
He's got no exactly idea. He doesn't know. He can't figure it out.
Andy Reid, who 2 years ago was so impacted by the Bucs killing the Chiefs in that game where they literally had the biggest offensive line makeover that I can ever remember in one offseason, where they're just like, that's not happening again. We're changing everything. So Andy Reid knows that. Their game plan will focus on slowing that down. What are some of the things you think Andy Reid going into this game will do to say, no, we're not just going to line up and let Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick and Javon Hargrave hit our quarterback? What do you expect from their game plan?
So screen is the obvious one, right? I think we all expect a screen. I think you gave the joke when we ended the Mina pod of like, the Eagles are going to take a shot in the first drive. The Chiefs are going to throw a screen on the first drive. Everything after
that's
that.
That's not a joke. That's happening.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Everything after that, don't bet on it. But if you can find a will Andy Reid call screen on the first drive prop, you take that because that's happening. So screen game for sure. The next thing you do is you condense the formations, right? I am really, really confident that the Chiefs are going to play a lot of 12-13 personnel. 12 and 13 personnel, one running back, two tight ends, or one running back and three tight ends. That's 12 and 13. There are a couple reasons for it. The first is something that you brought up in your nuggets. You've mentioned this before. The 13 personnel grouping for the Chiefs by expected points, the best personnel group in league seen this season, right? That's Travis Kelce plus Noah Gray and Jody Fortson on the field. So it's not even like, you know, back when the Eagles 12 personnel.
You say it and you're like, how is this possible? This isn't Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. Yeah.
So the reason it's so effective, right? The reason why it's so dangerous is because when you go 13 personnel, it's really hard to leave five defensive backs on the field. It's extremely difficult to against that sort of a look, justify having a nickel out. And if you do have the nickel out, they're going to run the ball on you, right? They have eight blockers on the line of scrimmage, and you're walking out with six dudes who are actual box players in terms of defensive linemen and linebackers. Then you're going to ask a safety to step down and your nickel to be in the fit. Like, that's such a huge mismatch that, like, that ball's going to Isaiah Pacheco. They're picking up six yards, and then Pacheco breaks a tackle. Now they're picking up 20. Like, they are as effective running the football this year, the Chiefs have been in the Patrick Mahomes era. And they've tried to do that. That's been intentional. All right, so if you do elect to go base, right, you put seven guys on the field who can play in the box for the Eagles, that's their 5-2 front. All right, play action pass. And now it's Patrick Mahomes. He's only got four true defensive back bodies to deal with. So, like, even if you cover stuff up, you're going to be covering it, if you're the Eagles, with TJ Edwards, Kaiser White, and, like, one of Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat dropping. Like, the Eagles are in a very awkward position against the 12 personnel sets and the 13 personnel sets that the Chiefs want to use, because they don't have a 4-3 package. They do not have a four-down defensive lineman and three linebackers. They don't have a base defense that they've played this year. So presumably they're going to try to play that in 5-2, which is Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat on the edges, and then, like, Linval Joseph in the middle with Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave as also defensive tackles. All five of those guys are pass rushers. So if they walk out 12, 13 personnel and you go five down defensive linemen, you have to rush five and play with six in coverage. That's blitzing Mahomes, technically. That's adding an additional rusher. This is the one thing you never, 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 never do against this guy is add the additional rusher. So, okay, now you have to drop one of Josh Sweat or Hassan Reddick into coverage. Guess who they're going to throw the football at? Like, the Eagles' lack of a 4-3 defense puts them in a really tricky spot. Now, I've had 2 weeks to prepare for this. So I think they're going to be able to find ways to drop those guys and protect them. They're going to play zone. They're going to have them relate to the back. They're going to rush them. And then I would imagine they also look at blitzing from that look. Blitz six, send seven, and play man coverage behind it and say, all right, if you're going to get us into a spot where we have to blitz guys, we're just going to send everybody. We're trying to keep these tight ends in protection, right? And then we're going to win Darius Slay against Marquez Valdes-Scantling on the outside. So there's ways to work around it, but it's a square peg, round hole. They're in a very tricky spot when it comes to the multiple tight end sets. And so you get those tight ends on the field, you get Mahomes under center, you go play action pass, you get chip help on the edges. It just protects you from the pass rush a little bit more. It puts the Eagles in weird personnel. So I expect screens, I expect 12 and 13 personnel. And then the last thing as an aside, and this is a good gambling look, I expect wide receiver handoffs. I expect little jet passes, little touch passes, little underneath stuff, little screens, all the little horizontal boundary stretch gadget plays that Andy Reid likes. Just get away from that pass rush. I think it's a big, like, you know, Kadarius Toney with a 13-yard run game, Sky Moore with, like, an 8-yard catch and run, you know, behind line of scrimmage on a screen, whatever. It's one of those games where, listen, we don't want to deal with Linval and Jordan and Fletch and Hargrave and have to handle living in these trenches, right? So we're just going to get outside of the boundary on you. And now you can't rush Mahomes because the ball's out in a second and it's out to a speed threat on the boundary. That's what I think you do to neutralize Eagles' rush.
I'm daring them to run the ball. Go ahead, Andy. Run the ball. Pick up 5 yards per carry, whatever. Maybe it's more than that, like you mentioned. Maybe they're gashing you a little bit. I'm very patient, saying if that's how we're going to lose, let's see how the game proceeds.
Big John Gannon philosophy day. Big Gannon.
Yeah. That's how he plays that. That's how, you know, that's kind of in his DNA. Anyway, looking back, prevent explosive pass plays. If the run defense isn't the best, that's okay. You can lose that way. It looks like Ben just finished that water bottle. Did you just finish that water bottle? You held it up like victory. Oh, okay. I thought you were, I don't know if you were adjusting your sleeve or something there. Okay.
I was. I thought you were. You don't have to read everything into every single thing I do on the Zoom calls.
Okay, you obviously don't know me well enough, because all I do is read into everything everyone around me does at all times and then make internal observations, and then I share some of them, not all of them, on the podcast. This is literally my brand and, my career profile.
New Phoenix goal is get Shield drunk and learn some of the observations that don't get shared on the podcast. Let's get the tongue loose.
God. Yeah. Shield's old. I don't know that that's going to happen. She'll be out for the week if that ends up happening. Looking at the Chiefs' 13 personnel, they throw the ball out of it roughly 60% of the time out of their 13 personnel. Mahomes completed 77% of his passes, and averaged 11.2 yards per attempt with 9 touchdowns and no interceptions in 13 personnel. I'm not letting that happen. No. Isaiah Pacheco, go ahead and try to beat me in the playoffs. That's fine. Again, I will adjust if I need to, but that would really be my approach. So that's going to be fun to watch early on. What do they do? Because I agree with you. I mean, it's been very interesting how much they've changed their personnel groupings this year. They're only in 11 personnel 55.7% of the time. That's like a massive dip. That's like over 12% dip from last year. And obviously they traded Tyreek Hill in the offseason. So that's a big factor there.
Yeah, to that note, less 11 personnel means less spread. The Chiefs had their tightest formational width, how far it is from the widest guy on the one side of the field to the widest guy on the other side of the field. Their tightest formational width the last 7 seasons this year per NGS. They are not a spread team anymore. They are much more so of like a condensed team and get your outbreakers on. They still have their spread sets, but like the Eagles are 100% more of like a spread offense than the OG spread than the Chiefs are. And the Chiefs were the OG spread offense when Mahomes started and when Reed took over and they just had Travis Kelce out wide and everything like that. Like it's a different era, man. It's wild.
Yeah, Reed really is. He has a lot of positive traits, but his ability to evolve and adapt based on his personnel. And listen, it's easier when you have Mahomes at quarterback, but still to do what they've done with the personnel turnover that they've had this year has been very, very impressive. All right, let's take a quick break and we will come back and talk more about this matchup.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
All right, we're back on the Ringers Philly special. So we talked a little bit about how do the Eagles defend some of these personnel groupings, what to look for when they're rushing the passer. How do we feel about the back end? What are we doing here? Mina suggested play a little more man, maybe. You obviously have the quarter stuff, the split safety zone stuff is in your pocket that you're used to playing. Is it just a matter of do a little bit of everything because you can't do one thing against Mahomes? Or is there one way that you kind of lean towards in this matchup that say, I think they might come out and try to play this way against Mahomes? What do you think about that aspect of it?
Right. So as a reminder, Mahomes, 26 touchdowns versus man coverage, 60.8 pass expected points added overall in the season against man coverage, 2 times any other quarterback in the league. Mahomes against zone coverage this season, 8.7 yards per attempt, second best in the league, 87 total EPA, first in the league, 54% success rate, first in the league. So if you start with the what does the other guy do poorly question, you're nowhere. You got to go.
Yeah. The basic EPA per pass play, first against man, first against zone, first against blitz, first against no blitz, first against split safety coverage, and second against
there it is.
Single high coverages.
We got them.
It's very rare. And it wasn't always like I remember I did that, you know, like the nerd guide preview stuff before the season. And there were a couple of years in there where there was some differences in his splits. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to take some time to adjust to team saying, we're not giving up the explosive play. We're going to play too deep. Well, guess what? He and all the great quarterbacks have the ability to problem solve, and he has solved that. So, yes, there's nothing obvious in any of the splits that, hey, this gives you a better chance against Mahomes.
Right. So then you go back to say, well, okay, well, what do we do better? And what they do better is they play zone better. When Mina brought up like the man thing, I was like,
maybe. I don't know if I agree with that.
All right. Why so?
The numbers would say that's not exactly true. Now, the snaps are fewer with man, but they've been the best man coverage team in the NFL this season, the Eagles, if you look at EPA per pass play. And I can, as you talk, I can pull up the numbers again. It's football, so the samples are not huge, but they have been a very good man coverage team this year.
I wonder, like, if there's selection bias on the datum when they're in man, because I bet you they're in man a lot when they're like in third and 10, and that like that's obviously like where like you're going to get they're going to get more of their sacks. They're in positive script for defense, period, and that's when they end up playing man coverage, as opposed to like they play zone on like first and 10 and second and six and like the neutral script downs. So to me, like that, I'd be curious if that's a part of it, like in terms of selecting where they play their man coverage, because they don't play a lot of man on early downs, but. I wouldn't have guessed that their man performance, like their efficiency metrics were better than their zone metrics. So that is surprising. I think you'll see zone because I think, A, they'll feel better. They'll feel more comfortable in zone. To me, like that's their like base defense. Now, if they are in a position where they have to be in a lot of five-man fronts because of the personnel that the Chiefs are putting on the field, then they're going to play more zone. Right, they're going to have to play zone whenever they drop one of those guys. Otherwise, they're going to be in a position where they're rushing five and then playing like you know cover one, like man single high with no robber, and they're going to lose. You can't like that. That's untenable. And so I think you're going to have to like be dropping sweat and dropping ready cover so often. And then when you're in those looks, you're going to have to be playing zone. And when you're in your six guys deep, I guess you do your best to play man coverage and you live with no double cover on Kelce. The nice thing about playing zone coverage is it gives you the ability to double Kelce independent of where he is, right? Like I've said before, the Eagles don't really have much of like a one double 87 call. They can install it over the course of the next 2 weeks. I think it'd be nice if they did. I don't expect them to. It's not like they have a cover one call where they just have two guys on Kelce. They're going to, if they want to double him, be playing zone, just have multiple sets of eyes on him, have a cloud corner and a cloud safety to his side. Kind of that's going to be the sort of approach. So I think that's what you do. And that works. Like that's good because the Eagles, when they're in their zone defense, they're extremely good at forcing underneath throws. They're great, right? They're one of the best performing teams in the league in terms of discouraging downfield targets, breaking up downfield targets, ensuring the quarterback's A-dot drops, and then they rally up and they tackle. Like that's what they've wanted to be. That's that hustle and hits and integrity and tackling philosophy that followed Matt Eberflus followed John Gannon from being under Matt Eberflus. It puts the Chiefs in a position that feels less dangerous, right? Because they're not throwing the ball as far down the field. But that's also what they've like elected to become as a team this year. So I don't know. I think it's where you end up. I think you end up in playing zone and putting the blanket on them deep and forcing them to be underneath. You just have to be careful of like the Chiefs might feel very comfortable doing that. They've done that a lot this season and been successful.
Yes.
It's tricky.
That's how everyone plays them. Yeah, that's how they're used to beating that. Like I said, that you know that was an issue for them at one time. Is it still an issue? The numbers would say no, it's not still an issue. But this is just such a hard question. I know people are you know sick of it, just saying like Mahomes is unstoppable. But I mean, we just gave you the numbers. Like there's a reason why this is such a difficult task. It's so hard to come up with exactly what they should do. So I just looked up the numbers quickly. Yeah, they're first in man coverage, EPA per pass play. First and second down, you do have a bit of a point. I mean, first and second down, they're sixth, and third and fourth down, they're first. And so, yeah, it does get a boost
in terms
there,
of their man coverage efficiency.
And again, these are all like it's around 200 snaps total. So there's always going to be some noise with this, but certainly their corners can play man coverage on the outside. You would feel good about that. Avante Maddox, assuming that he's going to be okay and good in this game, can give you good coverage there in the slot. So I just think you have to switch it up. And it's such a cop out. It's so stupid to say. It's the easiest thing to say.
Right.
But that is like the formula against the great quarterbacks. I mean, if they know what's coming, if they spot a tendency, if they figure it out before the snap, especially someone like Mahomes, I mean, it's over. You're not going to have a chance. He's going to know where to go with the football unless, like we said, you're getting to him so quickly that he can't execute what he wants to execute, then he's going to find answers. So I think that's the key to me. I mean, it'll be... Yeah, I mean, you can come out and say, hey, let's force them to put together long, methodical drives. And if they come out and their first two drives are 12 yeah. plays apiece and they score a touch, because they're so good in the red zone. That's the other thing. Andy Reid is a red zone wizard. I mean, you look at their numbers right. recently, especially in the red zone, those have been fantastic. So like bend but don't break doesn't exactly work here because they generally don't allow you to play that way because they finish their drive yeah. so well.
Another cool note on that, this again from NGS, Eagles recorded the second lowest defensive success rate against red zone runs this season. The Chiefs were tied for 10th offensively in their offensive red zone run success rate. If the Chiefs get down low, they're scoring 7. We talked about this on the previous pod with the Eagles. When the Eagles get down low, they're in a position to score 7, and they have to score 7. The same is true of the Chiefs. Prepping this Chiefs offense versus Eagles defense pod really made me realize that I'm not going to feel good about which team's going to win this game until I see like the first quarter, because both offenses are in a place where they're going to want to be methodical. They're going to want to run the football. They're going to want to, you know, inch it down the field a little bit, not test too much deep. I said the Eagles will have more explosive passes for sure. They're going to get stuff over the top for AJ Brown. Absolutely. But their base offense is going to be run, right? And they're going to, you know, throw the ball underneath, like get Jalen Hurts, you know, feet underneath him, try to eat some clock. And then the Chiefs are going to be really methodical. And, you know, Mahomes is going to throw to the back quickly, right? And they're going to run the ball against the four down fronts. And it's going to be a lot of, like, you know, 3 points, 3 points, 7 points, 7 points. It's going to be a lot of just that and everything. Once one team busts something open, that team's going to win. I'm positive, right? I like the moment yeah. one of these offenses gets put out of their script, I think we're in like, you know, the end game. And I think that the team that has the lead is going to have a good chance to control the game the rest of the way. So like I think I'm picking the Chiefs. I think that'll be where I land. I'm like 51-49. I think it's going to be such a good game. I think it's going to be high scoring. But I tell you right now, if I see a 10-0 Eagles first quarter, Eagles are winning this thing. Like, I really, like, even with Mahomes the other sideline, like, the fear of the fourth quarter comeback.
Oh, I don't think Eagles no. fans will be feeling comfortable about that at all.
I said literally last pod, if Eagles have a 14-0 lead in the first quarter.
I know, that's why right. I'm confused. Now right. you're saying something different.
It's because I really think if the Chiefs are in a spot where they have to pass, they have to spread to pass, they have to throw the ball downfield, like they have to be aggressive. I'm talking about like a 10-0 lead in the first quarter. They won't be put in that position just yet. But really, like a lot of these, for both offenses, things are very script dependent, in my opinion. The Chiefs really are going to want to be in heavy personnel. They're going to want to present run looks. And if the Eagles can get them out of that where they have to present pass looks, the Eagles absolutely have the advantage in terms of their pass rush and their coverage. And then when the ball is flipped, the Eagles need to be able to incorporate the zone raid running game. They need to be able to incorporate Hurts' legs on the ground. If they're constantly facing third and tens, they're constantly facing a spot where they need explosive pass, the Chiefs have the advantage. They absolutely do. So this is very much so like a who can avoid third and longs, who can avoid a bad turnover and a big hole, right? A multi-score deficit. Like, this is a game that's very heavily dependent on script. And that's why I think we're going to see, like, a one-score game the whole way, a total nail-biter, a who-has-the-ball-last-possession sort of a game. So I think both these teams know, like, you can't let these other guys get too far ahead. It's going to knock you off your game plan, and then you're in trouble.
I don't think I agree. I don't think I agree that it's a script game at all. I mean, I think both these offenses, and I would give the Chiefs the edge here just because they do it by passing the ball. Like they can just, I mean, they could be down 10-0 and then you could just go get something from the fridge and come back and they're winning 14-10. Like even if they're down early, they want to be pass heavy. We know how they want to play. I mean, I don't think like script doesn't matter. They want to pass the ball. Now, how they pass the ball, yes. Doing it wisely, not letting the Eagles pass rush completely crush them. But I just don't think that there's any scenario here where they're going to come out and say, we're going to run the football and that's going to be what we need to do to win this game. I mean, they can literally change it and flip it by the snap of your fingers. But we'll see. I agree that yeah. it's going to feel... I do agree that it's going to feel like if there's like a muffed punt or if there's a fumbled snap, it's just going to feel like, shoot, is that it? Like, because I do yes. think there's going to be a slim margin for error. I mean, just to speak to it, how competitive, and who knows, Super Bowls are weird. Like, it could be a blowout. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. Patrick Mahomes has played 90, I gave this stat before, I'll give it again, has played 93 games. His team has had a lead in the fourth quarter or been within one score in 90 of them. You're talking about a 3% chance that his team gets blown out based on his career so far. And then you have an Eagles team where they're 16-1. They're 16-1 with Jalen Hurts as right. the starter. I mean, there was one game with Jalen Hurts as the starter that they didn't win and that they weren't really in, and that was that Washington game, which is a weird, fluky game. So can weird, fluky games happen? Yes, but unless it's like the extreme, the tail of outcomes for one of these teams, I think we're going to have a close game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I the way you're talking about it is like, helped me kind of clarify and sharpen my idea in the sense that I'm thinking about a guy walking on a high wire where it's like, all right, you want to be 50-50. You want to be perfectly balanced. If you're 55-45, it's okay. You can get back, no problem. If you're like 60-40 balance, you're probably okay. You're good. Once you start getting to 65-35, buddy, we're falling. we're landing in the net, right? You're off the wire. Like, it's going to be really hard if one...
In terms of what? Run, pass, balance,
you're saying? In terms of, like, win probability, right? In terms of, like this game's going to be a okay. one-score game. Okay, it's going to gotcha. Be back and forth. Yeah, right. Okay. So I think, like, it's that sort of an idea where it feels like, right, if there's that big swing for one of these teams, I think it's going to be really hard for the Seesaw to get back balanced in terms of win probability. I think it's going to be tough for there to be a comeback, which is nuts to say about a Patrick Mahomes-led team. But I just... The Eagles...
Yeah, I don't agree with
the
that.
The Eagles sitting on the ball, I think it's just... I think if the Chiefs...
You're right. They could run it. Yeah, they could gash them.
Yeah, and I just think if the Chiefs are, like, very clearly on a pass script, I don't think they have the personnel to beat the Eagles, and I think the pass rush takes over. They have to be able to go heavy personnel and play action and run in order to really negate the pass rush and to attack the secondary. I firmly believe that. And that's why, like, when you say, I don't think the Chiefs are going to, like, run to win the game, I absolutely do. I think it's a huge Isaiah Pacheco game. I think that the Chiefs are going to, yes, 100%.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Andy Reid, is he coaching this game or not?
He is coaching this game.
He didn't leave the state? Okay.
But it's not... It's not like, oh, they're going to like be like 60-40 run. It's to say that I think their runs are going to be effective, and I think that Pacheco breaking tackles and staying ahead of the script is going to be a huge part of why. And the way that is untrue, like the way the Eagles stop that, is by going five down, and the second they go five down, now Mahomes takes over, right? And it's kind of that interplay. But I 100% believe, like you talked about how Gannon, like you need to be patient, you need to make them force the, you know, throw underneath, you need to make them run the football. I think Pacheco is going to punish them for that. I think Pacheco has the talent, the Chiefs running back, young player out of Rutgers, to really hurt the Eagles for that. And then it's going to start to get sweaty.
I would tell Linval Joseph, I would tell Jordan Davis, if you guys want to go out Saturday night, it's cool. Go ahead. Your services are probably not going to be needed in this game on Sunday. Maybe I'm wrong. I think the Chiefs could sign an agreement that they have to play 11 personnel and pass the ball on every snap, and they could still score 30 points in this game. I don't think they need to rely. Listen, the 13 personnel is nice. We gave the numbers. It's part of what they do. No doubt about it, but I don't think it's the only way. I mean, listen, the Eagles had the best pass defense in the NFL by DVOA, which accounts for schedule strength. At the same time, I think if you're, I don't think the overall schedule strength criticisms are fair. I think if you want to say their defense has not been tested by a great quarterback, and when it has not exactly looked great. I think that is fair. I mean, there's been three times they faced a top 10 quarterback in EPA per pass play. Jared Goff was one of them. He hung 35 on them in week one. Dak Prescott was another one. He hung 40 on them late in the season. And the other one was Trevor Lawrence and the run game. I mean, those are the three top 10 in EPA per pass play guys they faced this year, and now they face Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I will give Jonathan Gannon all honestly, Jonathan, even if they get lit up, like he's done a good job this year, and the defense has way exceeded my expectations. Like there really is no shame in getting lit up in the Super Bowl by Patrick Mahomes. It really goes to 2017. They got lit up by Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, and no one really cares about that one because they won the game, but also because Tom Brady was just unbelievable in that game and carving them up. But man, it really, for Gannon, I hadn't thought about this until just now. Can you imagine if he puts together some kind of special big boy game plan in this game. And like, we're talking about an Eagles win in a game where they slow down Patrick Mahomes. Now all of a sudden we're going to have to go back and delete like 30 episodes yep. from this year. Like, he will reach a legendary status. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true. If you go in the Super Bowl and he comes up with a game plan where afterwards we're going, oh my God, look what they did to Kelsey on third down. Oh my God, look, Patrick Mahomes had to hold the ball because they did this. If he comes up with wrinkles like that in this game, he becomes like a Philadelphia hero for this is right. not hyperbole from now until the end of time. Like, that outcome is in play for him. So I hadn't even thought yes. about that angle until just now, but I thought about that video of him saying we're gonna gut these guys or whatever against the 49ers, and maybe like this 2-week stretch Jonathan Gannon, just his reputation in Philadelphia is completely different than maybe it was before. I don't know, maybe I'm going off on a tangent.
No, I agree with you. And I think, like, again, like, I feel like I have more faith in him being able to do that than you do.
I just think the Chiefs, I have no faith. You could tell me it was really almost any defense in the NFL this year facing Mahomes and Reed and this offensive line in a big game, and I would say, I think the more likely outcome is that Mahomes, Reed, and the offense gashes them. That's all. It's more about the Chiefs offense to me, really, than the Eagles defense. The Eagles defense has played well. They have the corners. They have the pass rush. They don't have like this obvious weakness where you're saying, man, this guy's going to get targeted a million times. Like, I don't think this is that kind of game. To me, it's just more about the other guys and how good I think they are.
I think.
Yeah, you're back. You're at a loss for words. I have not seen this so far in a pod this year.
I know. I'm just, I want to make sure.
You're thinking.
Whenever you and I have debates, I always think it's important for me to state my case at the end, because usually you sneak me into saying things I get in trouble for later.
I don't sneak anything. I just respond.
Scurrilous. All right. I think Gannon will play a passive approach that will allow the Chiefs to run on them and allow the Chiefs to have underneath passes. I think the Chiefs will largely score a lot of points as a result of that approach. But I think the Eagles won't get beat deep. I think the Eagles won't give up huge yards after the catch to Travis Kelce over the intermediate and MBS over the intermediate. I don't think they'll give up, you know, embarrassing huge, like, you know, Kadarius Toney runs and whatever. I think at times it'll look easy. I think at times it'll look way too easy and frustratingly easy. But I think if Gannon gets into a spot where he knows Mahomes has to pass the football, I think the Eagles defense does have a huge advantage there. I do think that their pass rush will be enough. Their coverage talent will be enough. Their work in zone and their ability to double Kelce in zone will be enough that if it's the offense scoring a ton of points, or if it's a muff special teams kick or whatever it ends up being that gets the Eagles in a spot where the Chiefs clearly have to throw, I do think that Gannon's defense in that moment will shine. And I will enjoy that moment if and when we get it.
Okay. All right. I would still, Eagles are up 21-0 in the second half. Chiefs are throwing on every play. I think I still feel like the Chiefs
it'll be sweaty.
Come back, snap of their fingers. All right. Are there any other? All right. So we know we had a big Kelce discussion earlier in the week. We talked about it today. I don't think we need to hit on that. You were talking about the run game with Pacheco. Jerick McKinnon is the guy to watch as a pass catcher out of the backfield, which, again, I think that he will be a factor in this game. I like, not that, you know, we're doing prop bets here, but like the overs on McKinnon and Gainwell are two that I would be looking at, because I think
22 and a half receiving yards for Jerick McKinnon. Yeah, don't worry, I know the number.
Okay, you know the number. Okay, yeah. What about wide receiver? Any of these guys? I know you mentioned, you know, Kadarius Toney maybe on some jet sweeps, some horizontal run stuff. They've got MVS. They've got Juju Smith-Schuster. They've got Sky Moore. Mecole Hardman is out for this game. Yep. He will not play. Anything about any of those wide receivers that we should close with here that has your attention, or not really?
I think they're going to test a couple big posts to MVS and to Justin Watson, probably MVS. Watson was sick last week, but Watson actually plays like a decent number of snaps to them and is a big guy who's got some speed. These Eagles play quarters, and so you want to throw a big post against that. So, you know, MVS can run away from Bradbury a little bit. That's just a matchup to watch out for. In general, I would say the player that at wide receiver has the most potential to damage the Eagles is Kadarius Toney. Toney is their screen target guy. He's their underneath guy. He's their behind the line of scrimmage guy. Throw him a swing pattern, whatever. And like, Toney was drafted by the Giants in the first round. He's been hurt and everything. Like, the whole arc of Toney, and like whether he's overdrafted and overvalued and what his skill set actually is, like, push that aside. The Eagles are playing the Chiefs. He is going to be probably healthy for this game, right? Andy Reid said that he and Juju both look like they're doing pretty good, and the arc of the week looks good for them. And Tony is just, like, a nightmare to tackle. Like, independent of routes and drops and whatever, just, like, when he gets the ball 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, it's a nightmare. He's one of the herky-jerkiest, weirdest, toughest dudes in the league to tackle. Very unique mover. So a lot of the stuff we talked about prepping for the Niners, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, the danger of a guy turning a negative 3 yard play into an 80 yard touchdown. The dude for the Chiefs this year who does that for them is Kadarius Toney. And so that's number 19 is the player that you have to watch out for. Just to talk about stupid ways to give up seven is falling off of Kadarius Toney on a curl route and then watching him outrun Reed Blankenship and Marcus Epps down the sideline, right? You just gotta, that's the player that I'm most concerned about having some game breaker that really tips the scales in the Chiefs' favor.
Yeah, injuries have been the issue, but he is a special player with the ball in his hands. I could kind of see that if the Chiefs win, that he is, you know, Giants fans are going, oh my gosh, you know, we didn't have any wide receiver talent and we let this guy go, and now he's starring in the Super Bowl. That is a guy I could see. MVS had a terrific game last week, so he's certainly come on for them here. But again, this is not, you know, you're not facing a Justin Jefferson or a Jamar Chase, and your corners have played really, really well this year, you know, as well really as any corner trio, corner tandem, however you want to phrase it, that I can remember for the Eagles. I was having this thought, Ben, and we can finish on this. Like, this Eagles team is making me look at that 2017 team and being like, that team really wasn't that talented. I mean, you're looking at it like compared to this team, and I this is where I've settled in my mind. And again, this can be the last thing. I'm looking at 2017 going, that was like an incredible coaching job to get that type of run, to get that type of season out of those players. When you look at, you know, all due respect to Torrey Smith starting for you at one wide receiver spot, Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, Patrick Robinson, again, all those guys had great moments in that season. There's no doubt about it. But man, you compare those guys to kind of what you have on this team where it's just stacked everywhere. And this to me feels like a Howie Roseman victory, the 2022 Eagles, given all the talent on the roster. And I'm putting 2017 in like that was a Doug Peterson and coaching staff victory there. Yeah. What do you think? Is that fair or unfair?
I think I always, whenever people bring up the 2022 roster and how much of it is a Howie Roseman victory, I always do say, like, it does take a really good coach, a good culture coach, a guy that players like, a guy that's genuine, to get a bunch of new bodies in the building and have everybody be good. Remember when, like, AJ Brown was a little bit pissed after the Giants game? We were like, oh wow, somebody's upset. Uh-oh, yeah. Right? Like, you know, like, obviously winning cures all ills, but like, all these players come in and are just maximized, right? They're used the correct way. They like the new role. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was like getting multiple unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in New Orleans and also complaining about his role. Nothing, right? Like they've done. That coach staff's done a really good job at integrating new players, which is tough. It can be challenging, especially when you're bringing in stars. And so, hats off. But yeah, I think it's generally a Howie Roseman victory. The other thing that I'll say is, we don't talk a lot. We used to talk a lot about Roseman's draft history and just how over the last few drafts, Roseman hadn't necessarily been hitting at the level you'd like for a starting general manager to hit. Starting general manager, I say, as if it's a position. A general manager to hit, right? And that's because drafting's like always cyclical, right? Like the 2019 class, Dillard, Sanders, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, you know, shaky. That 2020 class for a while was, you know, Jalen Reagor, Jalen Hurts, Davion Taylor, Kayvon Wallace, Jack Driscoll. You know, it was like, not a great class. Nobody cares anymore because of what Jalen Hurts has become. But holy smokes, man, I was running through some Eagles offensive film today, working on preview stuff. Devontae Smith is so good. Landon Dickerson is so good. And Milton Williams, like we said, has really come on over the last month or 2 months. Kenny Gainwell has really come on the last month, 2 months. That's the 2021 class. Like the free agent additions have been great. The trading is always awesome. He hit 2021 very well. They did it, and that was coming off of the 4-11-1 year. That was coming off the Carson Wentz transition. They had an early pick in Devontae Smith, and they went after it in a big way. Two top 40 picks in Devontae Smith and Landon Dickerson. Those are key starters on this offense. And so Howie Roseman, success story for sure, but everybody always brings up the free agency and the trading. And then obviously the drafting of Jalen Hurts, the one key moment of like understanding the quarterback position, understanding the value of QB2. But they did that 2021 class great. And all four of those players are right now huge, huge, huge impact players in this season, in this upcoming game. And so a little feather in the drafting cap. Howie doesn't get too many of them, but he deserves one for last year's class.
Yeah, he has built a great team. There's no doubt about it. That's been a big part of the story here in Phoenix, Arizona. All right. And that will do it, I think, for this episode of the Ringers Philly Special. I think we're working on some things, maybe thinking about some type of Birds with Friends crossover if we can fit it
Never
in
heard
here
of it.
Between now and as listeners pointed out, Ben, you're too young. I mean, my first was Tim McManus during the Birds. Yeah. You're not too young. You read Birds 24 during the Birds 24/7. So, you know, as what you were feeling seeing me talking to Bo, it was what Bo was feeling or is still feeling when he sees me talk to Tim McManus.
Because let's get
you're
a
first,
Eagles.
You know, you can never.
Let's get an Eagles podcast co-host rankings from Shiel.
Yeah, come on. Well, I'm going to take the Ed Kelsey on this and go, you're not. I would just say I'm doing a great job of making everyone look
that's
good
exactly
on all
correct.
The successful
that's a good take. I wasn't doing this when you were on with Tim. I was a listener. I was a fan, but I wasn't doing it yet. And so it doesn't feel
right.
the same
you're
way
reading.
As
yeah.
to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. All right. Well. So we might do that. We'll see. We'll definitely be back with the Thursday 10. And then I think Benny Souls, you're still going to have some special probably things maybe planned for a little
yes.
Friday bonus episode, correct?
Okay. Less guaranteed
so
than it was last
still
time, but still probably yes.
Okay, we'll see. Listen, your feed has been filled. You probably are on content overload this week, so enjoy it. Take it in. If you don't have time to listen to all of our shows, just, you know, download, subscribe, hit play, fast forward a little bit, make sure it gets to the end so that Cliff can tell me, you know, in a couple of weeks, hey, we had big numbers during Super Bowl week. I think you guys are going to get to go back next year, something like that. All right. Appreciate it, everyone. Thank you for listening. Oh, don't forget, get those questions in. Hashtag RingerPhilly on Twitter, and we will get to as many as possible on the Thursday 10. All right, everybody, have a great day, and we will talk to you soon on the Ringers Philly Special.